This is a snippet of my introduction to Nginx Udemy course, discussing in detail the internal architecture of Nginx. So in this lecture, I talk about how many processes does Nginx spin up, how these processes accept connections, how they are competing for precious CPU cores, and many, many other things. Hope you enjoy it. And if you want to check out the course, head to nginx.husseinnasser.com. This will redirect to Udemy with the latest discount coupon. It supports the show. Thank you so much. Welcome to the Backend Engineering Show with your host, Hussein Nasser. This is the show where we discuss the art and the craft of building software and cover recent news on backend technologies. If you enjoy the show, make sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel and rate it on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. With that said, let's get on the show. What's going on, guys? In this lecture, I want to go through the internal architecture of Nginx. So this lecture is going to be slightly different. We're going to go deep into Nginx, how the worker processes are spun up, how the connection management is done, and stuff like that. Exactly understanding how Nginx deal with these large number of connections based on the number of CPU cores that you have on your server. Excuse my voice, I have a little bit of a sore throat fighting it. But let's get into it. So this is not entirely, I try to simplify this, the architecture. The Nginx architecture starts with something called the master process. When you spin up Nginx, it starts a process that corresponds to the rest of all the processes of Nginx, right? Yeah. There are two things that I didn't mention here related to the cache management of Nginx. So when you spin up Nginx, it spins up a process or two processes to manage the cache. That means reading the cache from disk and also refreshing these caches. But this is, I thought this is not really what is more important. What is the most important thing is actually what we call the worker processes, or the child processes. So these are the processes that actually do most of the work, you know? And when you set Nginx to auto mode, which is the default, right? What will happen is n number of processes, worker processes, will be spun up based on how many hardware threads do you have, you know? And this is the hardware speaking, basically. When you have like a processor, it has multiple cores. Let's say you have four cores on your CPU, right? And usually at the hardware level, Intel, AMD, or Apple sometimes does time slicing where even the core itself, they split it into something called the hardware threads, where they present the CPU to the process, to the application, to the operating system as actual multiple cores. So each core becomes two hardware threads, right? Because they can do at that level, they will simulate almost in this particular case, eight cores, right? So that's why if you have four cores, you're going to have eight worker processes. If you have eight physical cores, you're gonna have 16, and so on, right? But for simplicity, let's say you have four hardware threads. So that's what, two cores, or sometimes even it doesn't have to be like this duality, right? One CPU core can have one hardware thread if you disabled, what is it called, hyper-threading, I believe. If you disable hyper-threading, you have one-to-one, right? And this is a choice you make based on performance and stuff like that. So we have now four worker processes, and the kernel sits right behind all of this stuff, you know? So if I have a client, this is presented by this laptop, want to connect to Nginx, let's say on port 80, that's where Nginx is listening, I'm hiding so many complexity behind this stuff here. But what's happening is when the client establishes this TCP connection, which is the SYN SYNACK ACK, the SYN request will go through the kernel, and the kernel will put it in something called the SYN queue. And that is kind of manages by the kernel, but it was allocated by Nginx when it says, hey, kernel, I'm listening on port 80. Please, anything that comes on port 80, please send it to me. And when that happens, the kernel will reply back with the SYN ACK, basically, to complete the TCP handshake. And then the client will reply back by an ACK, completing the three-way handshake. And when that happens, the kernel will move that fully fledged connection to something called the accept queue. And again, I'm not showing any of that stuff, just to simplify the picture here, right? And in that queue, so there are two queues, the SYN queue and the accept queue. And when that connection queue, the accept queue happens, right? And again, it's in the kernel. Nginx is responsible to get the connection from the accept queue. It says, hey, I want this connection back. And this is where you need basically, hours and hours to discuss this stuff. You know, how does Nginx, how does the process picks up a connection from this connection queue is an art by itself. There are so many methods. There are so many discussions. There are so many papers written about this particular problem, right? How do I accept as connections as fast as possible? You know, so many stuff here. And I think it's like a little bit out of the scope of this, you know, introductory course. I might create another course to discuss this in detail if you want. So what happened here, eventually, one of the worker processes will pick up this connection, and that connection will live in the worker process itself, you know, as a pointer, if you will. It's a file descriptor. We call it an integer value pointed to that connection. And the worker now is responsible to read data from this connection. Again, how this connection is picked up by what worker process is a completely different story. There is load balancing involved at the kernel level, right? There are sometimes all the worker processes listen on the same port, and the kernel actually distribute the connection between other worker processes. Sometimes the worker processes actually the master worker processes is what is delivered the connection, and it will distribute the connection based on that. But regardless, we have a worker picked up a connection. Now it's ready to read stuff, right? And it's actually consumed the request. So when you send a request, you consume it. You understand it's a request, whether layer 7 or layer 4. We talked about all that stuff, right? And then we'll take that stuff, and then it will decide what to do. What can it do when a request is actually sent? And now we have clients sending, right? So we have the client that's established a connection to worker 4. This client established a connection to worker 3, and it started sending a request, right? The actual HTTP request, for example. That request will go through the kernel, obviously. It will go through the TCP connection that we talked about. All of this data will live in that queue, right? In a specific buffer. And I talk about all of that, and if you're interested to know more, check out my networking course. I talk about details like these buffers and the window sizes and all that. The nitty-gritty detail about TCP. The worker process will read this request because it has to actively read it. It's not a push model. The kernel never pushes stuff to the process. It's not like, hey, I have data, here you are. No, it's a pull model, if you will. And this is, again, there is eventing involved. There is asynchronous I/O involved. There is this new thing that's called I/O URing, which effectively create a complete, let the kernel does the reading, and it will notify the worker process, hey, I have data for you. And listen that I said, I have data for you. I never said I have a request for you, right? There's a big, big difference between a request and just a stream of bytes. You got to understand that. That's where layer 7 and layer 4 comes into the picture. And here we're talking about layer 7, right? We need to terminate the data if there is TLS. There isn't in this case, right? We're going to terminate it and decrypt it, understand it, and then take that data, understand that this is the start of the request, this is the end of the request. Because when you look at layer four, the stream of data is just a stream of bytes, just garbage. The application, Nginx in this case, needs to read. Oh, there's a start of request. There's the end of the request. It needs to understand how to parse HTTP headers. And this differs from HTTP 1.1 versus HTTP 2 versus HTTP 3. Right? HTTP 3 is a completely different protocol. It's a quick. But the cost of this parsing, it lives right here. So that's CPU. Right? So each worker process is pinned to a CPU. And we never talk about why we have one worker per CPU, because we really need that worker process to live in a core and never leaves it. As fast as possible, never leave that CPU core. Why? Because there's something called context switches. And if you, I know I'm going to go over the previous, but this is all related, you know? If this worker tried to parse this request to understand how it actually, how it needs to respond to it, it needs to parse it. This parsing, before that, it needs to actually decrypt it. And this is where cryptography comes into the picture. So it needs to use whatever symmetric key encryption it used to decrypt that content and then parse that, find where the request actually is. All of this requires CPU, right? And when you do this operation, the sets of instructions that you have, this parsing logic, is basically it's just a set of instructions, and it lives in the CPU core. And the CPU will just pick one instruction at a time and keeps executing it. If you have a lot of processes and a lot of threads, then the CPU might kick you out, put you somewhere else back in memory, and then put some other process to execute its thread. That is called context switching. You switch the CPU off to do something else, and you are put on hold as a process. That is expensive, and it's not really expensive if you're doing it one or twice or three or 10 or 100 times. But if you're doing it millions and millions of times, especially if you have a lot of threads and they're competing for these cores, then becomes a problem, right? That's why we have one-to-one mapping here, so that as long as you don't have anything else but Nginx running on your machine, right? That's the goal here. We have to have one process, pinned, right? With that said, now that we know this stuff, we have a request. Worker 3 got a request, right? Worker 4 got a request. It has options. What can it do? Well, some requests might be to the web server aspects of Nginx. Hey, go and read the content from disk. And that is that particular request is an IO bound. We call it IO bound, right? Technically, the request parsing itself and decryption was CPU bound, but it's not as much, unless you have many, many requests coming in from that connection. Then you start feeling it. But there is certain logic in this case is IO bound. It means, hey, I'm sending the request to the disk to read this file, this HTML page, this CSS file, and then I'm going to respond back to the user. During that reading, I spend, 10 milliseconds. I'm waiting. I'm not doing anything because Nginx does always eventing. It has an event, right, where it will send the IO request and we'll just sit down and do the process can do something else. Right? And this technically goes through the kernel as well. I just didn't draw it because the IO is a kernel call, right? Alternatively, you can query something from a backend, right? Where, hey, go and, you're just doing a microservices, right? Where this is a reverse proxy in this particular case, where this is terminating the thing, go and make the request on the actual backend. That's also an IO request, right? It's just that over the network instead of going to disk. And you get back the response, and then you write back the response, and the writing of the response is also, the cost of writing to the socket, right? And the cost of re-encrypting, right? The content. Again, this particular case there is no encryption, but most cases you will encrypt, right? Because TLS will be enabled, right? And the cost of building the HTTP response, all of the CPU intensive stuff, and then encrypting it and then sending it back to the client. So that's basically how Nginx worked behind the scenes. And now you can just multiply that by many, many other users, right? Many users connect, they will be load balanced across these four workers in this particular case. So you can have thousands and thousands of connection per worker. So one worker might have, I don't know, 120, 200, 300 connections. So it will just flip between connections and to do multiple work. Yeah. It's like, oh, someone just sent me a request here. Let me parse it. Someone just sent me a request here. Let me parse it. So you can see that the Nginx is doing so much work, you know, to actually parse these requests. So CPU, you know, finding out the limit here to your CPU and finding out how many processes do you need to spin up, you know, and how, what other stuff is running on your Nginx is really critical. Hope you enjoyed this lecture. Gonna see you in the next one. Enjoy the course.